Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Okay.
Here we are.
Our final Quicksilver episode. I wrote this. I finished writing this yesterday and I was like tearing up.
Until Brimstone.
And then we'll be back with Quicksilver. Now we're not leaving. We have other books. Other things are happening. Other things are coming. This is just like the start of the podcast. The start of the whole thing. This is like our little baby.
Yeah.
And we watched it grow and shine. And by the time you are watching this episode, you will have hopefully listened to our interview with Callie Hart.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
True.
Yeah.
What a crazy little book trip these past however
ride.
Many months have been. 6 months, I guess.
6 months. Yep.
Yeah.
We started in February. Our first official full deep dive.
I mean, if nothing else, like, how proud to be that it got completed.
Oh, for sure.
Because how many podcasts start and don't finish even like a, you know, a book or a TV show or whatever it is. So
I'm really proud of us. And I feel like through this time, though, we have like grown an audience, and we have people who genuinely listen to our episodes every week, and I love that, and I'm really grateful for them, because without them we'd just be like talking to the void. So I'm really thankful for them, and I am thankful for like Callie writing this book and putting it out into the world, because without Quicksilver there would be no Goodish Girls, right?
That's right.
Like, this was the first thing I had to talk about it to everybody. And then I was like, you know what? Let's put it on the internet. Let's talk about it together.
Yeah.
So yay. Yeah. Here's to us. Here's to our final episode of our first deep dive. All right, my friends. Chapters 43, 44, and 45. Let's get into it. Chapters 43, Another Way. So Saris and Malcolm are mid-fight, right? Because in the previous chapter, she gets the coin. Her wrist is grabbed. She turns around. It's Malcolm, right? So they're mid-fight next to our not-yet-respawned spider demon, Mort Hill, on the ground, still dead. Malcolm, at this point, looks absolutely friggin' terrible. He is literally melting away. His skin is melting. His eyes are all icky. Like, gross.
Ew.
He tells Saris that he is not surprised that Madra attempted to kill her because she was scared of her kind. So, like, other alchemists, right? He notes that he says, it was a very talented alchemist who discovered the key to my blood gift. She was remarkable in many ways, deeply disappointing in others. What does that mean? Did he capture an alchemist? Was he once in a relationship with an alchemist? Right? Like, what do you, I feel like it could, that could be like a red herring. It could be an Easter egg. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe both.
Maybe both.
It's hard to say. The way he says it, the first sentence of that makes me think he had captured one and like used one, which would make sense because like even earlier in the book, they talk about how valuable Saris would be to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first thought. But then the second two sentences make you think it could have been more of like a relationship. But I don't know. I feel like he probably captured one.
Yeah. I'm 50-50. I think there's a history there.
Yeah. Maybe.
It's interesting. I would like to know more about that. I don't know if we ever will, right? But maybe. So yeah, when Malcolm...
Unfortunately, it won't be very relevant to later seasons, most likely. Or later seasons. Later books.
I mean, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I have a theory. I have a theory we're going to get into today.
Oh, okay. I can't wait. We'll circle back.
I have so many theories in this one. All right. So when Malcolm tells Ceres he wants her to help him, she says that she won't and she couldn't anyways because she can only work with the Quicksilver, right? Malcolm calls her a little girl and tells her she is ignorant. I hate when someone calls a grown woman little girl. I hate it. I don't know. Absolutely not. Yeah. And Malcolm gave me the ick as it is, but I was like, no, stop it. Call her any other thing.
Would you have rather him said darling?
Yes.
Or little girl?
Darling. I don't like when he says like cute, fluffy words to Kingfisher. He can say, I don't know why. When he's like, my love, I'm like, get away from him. Stop it. You're being weird. But when he calls her a little girl, I'm like, absolutely not. Somebody slap him across the mouth.
Oh, man.
It just got me. I don't know. I hated it. So Malcolm knocks Ceres down, steals the coin that she had and puts it in a pouch. Right. Because it burns his hands. So we like quickly puts it in a pouch and he notices her god markings. And if we remember, he says earth, air, fire, water, salt, brimstone, quicksilver, the full gamut, more power than any alchemist I've ever encountered. You are capable of restoring me to my power and a lot more. So she has access to so many things that we don't even know about yet, right? Like we're just going right below the surface at this point of what she is capable of. Because again, she's like, I can only work with the Quicksilver. And he's like, girl, what are you talking about? So he knows a lot that we do not know yet and that she doesn't know yet. So I feel like in book two, we will for sure find out all the things that she is about to encounter and have powers for, right?
So yeah, for sure.
Malcolm notes that he noticed Fisher's markings the moment he saw him, which of course he did. Freaking creep. He also noted that he smelled Ceres all over Fisher, which fair, right? Like Fae senses, he was a Fae, now he's a vampire, all the things, right? However, he says that he smelled the blood of her on Fisher and is jealous that he fed from her. He is the only person that has ever mentioned smelling her blood on him from when he bit her, which is fair, right? Because he's a vampire, so he probably could do that stuff or could smell that stuff.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really interesting. And I thought it was also super interesting that he was jealous because that he had asked and begged Fisher for that for a long time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume vampires would have a scent palette more for blood.
Yes.
Like, and detecting blood and things like that. So that tracks to me.
I just thought, and it was wild that it was still lingering on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the other smells last forever.
It's crazy.
It seems. He had no moss rubbed all over him. So
he didn't brush his teeth with the moss.
He needs to brush his teeth with the moss.
Brush your canines. Yeah. So this right here, this is where some things get very interesting. He says he wore that silver plate at his throat every day he was trapped here in this labyrinth. A gift from his mother, I believe. Pure silver imbued with some sort of particularly nasty magic. I couldn't have torn it off him if I tried. Adina was always such a thorn in my side. I promised to let Fisher go if he only gave me a taste. I promised to wipe Gilthry from his memory so he'd forget all about this place and what had happened here. If only he fed from me just once. I wanted to know the bliss that would come at the points of his teeth, but he denied me. He chose to stay and suffer, and then you, a pathetic, weak human, his mate. It's offensive. Okay. When you read this, read, like, did you get what I just think I uncovered right here?
No.
Okay. I'm going to go into it. So back previous episodes, we talked about the fact that his mom made the pendant, right? And she took it to the witches and she had it imbued with magic along with other items, .. Here we go again.
Yeah.
He wore that silver plate at his throat every day he was trapped here in this labyrinth. A gift from his mother, I believe. Pure silver imbued with some particularly nasty magic. I think that's one of the items.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Right?
I feel like I just never really thought about it. I was kind of like, okay, yeah, like makes sense because even in earlier chapters, like when Ceres is first meeting him, he almost always has that plate around his neck.
Mm-hmm. He does.
Even if he doesn't have like the rest of his armor or mm-hmm. it always mentioned how it was like one of the, I feel like it was one of the last things he took off.
Yeah.
Like in the first few chapters. So
mm-hmm. I think that's one of the items.
It makes sense to me.
And it makes sense why he's keeping it on, right? Because if his mom was like, hey, protect your name at all costs, here is this to protect your neck, right? Because she's a seer. She's an oracle. So she knew, I'm assuming, that Malcolm was coming, that he wanted to bite him, like all these things. So she was like, hey, going to make him a pendant so he can go through the Quicksilver. Going to make him this like neck brace, essentially, so that way Malcolm can never get to his neck. Yeah. Mama thought it out.
Oh, yeah.
Wild. I would bet money that that is one of the objects. I haven't figured out the other objects yet, but that one for sure.
Yeah, makes sense.
So before Malcolm knew it, Ceres pulled a blade out of the like she has them tucked into the side and she stabs him in the throat. In return, he punches her straight in the gut, right? This really hurt her. She already had broken ribs. She already had all the things like hurting her, right? So she was fading away, but promised Malcolm that she would kill him. He laughed and reminded her that he was eternal and he was actively healing as they were speaking. So like, even though she just stabbed him, like that stab in the side was healing at that moment. But what he did not see coming was that in all the chaos, Ceres grabbed the pouch and the little coin was in, right? And Malcolm jumped and grabbed it back, but the coin was already in her hand. So she, because she's a thief, so she has that experience of like grabbing things quickly. She grabbed the pouch, took the coin. He grabbed the pouch back. No coin in there, right? She flipped it and everything shook when it hit the ground. A massive wind ripped through the labyrinth and the shouts of Anorath Mor were everywhere. As the wind was soaring through, it took all of the high and the low Fae of Gilthry into ashes and finally laid them to rest.
Thank God.
I know. It's about time. Those Fae have been through enough things.
Those poor souls just need to be put to rest.
They were finally released as they have been begging for years.
Yeah.
Malcolm is devastated because his army, his children, as he calls them, are now gone. Ceres finds her footing for the last time and removes Malcolm's head from his body. Malcolm was killed now with a god sword, right? With Solace. Malcolm's head had went into blue flames and the rest of his body caught fire as well. Solace put off a bright light into the sky, which I'm assuming is angel's breath, right? The magic that comes out of the sword into the sky. And as it crashed down, it lit the amphitheater on fire as well. The energy and power that came out of Solace had not been seen in 1,000 years. And afterwards, it did go dark once again. So I think it's going to stay. I think they're staying alive. Like, even though it went dark once again, like, I don't think that magic is going anywhere. I think it's back.
No. Yeah. It's more, I feel like it's more like hibernation, you know,
right.
Like it's resting.
Yeah.
Sleep mode.
Yeah. It was like awake energy and then like tired. It's been a long time since it's had to do anything, so I'm sure it's a little worn out.
It put itself back into do not disturb.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So as Fisher is attempting to find Ceres during this, he is mind speaking, and an interesting conversation is happening. They say it's fine, it'll be okay. Madra, the coward, disappeared into the Quicksilver as soon as the wind hit, and Bellicon, Loras dealing with him. So right now you have Malcolm, who is beheaded. You have Madra, who fled at this point. Malcolm cannot be dead, because they told us that they have to kill all three, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't kill Madra. Madra fled into the Quicksilver. She gone. She off doing whatever it is she's doing. She's fleeing at this point.
Yeah.
So how does that work? Were the three just being overdramatic and being like, if you can't kill one, you have to kill us all? But like, they tried to kill Bellicon and he healed, right?
Yeah. Perhaps.
So I don't know.
Perhaps.
And then if Malcolm is gone, if he really is dead, I ask my question again that I asked many episodes ago. Is he in the Wicker Woods? Or can he be in the Wicker Woods because he claims he doesn't have a soul?
That was the first thing I thought in this moment, just because of the podcast, was, mm-hmm. Okay, is he now in the Wicker Woods?
But he claims he doesn't have a soul. So can he? A, is that correct? Is he right on that? Or is he just being dramatic?
I personally don't think he could go to the Wicker Woods. I don't think without a soul. And it's right. Like, however it describes it, like the worst souls or like, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
however it's described.
Like the worst of the worst live in the woods.
Right. But maybe he could come back. Maybe it's like Voldemort vibes.
Right. Something. I don't know. I feel like they made a point to say that you have to kill them, all three of them, to completely get rid of them. And they mm-hmm. only technically killed one of them. It was the most powerful one of the three.
Right.
But well, only one nonetheless.
I guess then it just, perhaps they do come back. In my mind, the next book would be facing a different big bad thing.
Agreed.
I still stick to my theory that Kingfisher is going to get worse and Cirrus is going to have to, like, you know, go on some mission to
mm-hmm.
help him. But I don't know. Maybe they will be back. Maybe that is carried over into this book.
It just seems we'll interesting that out. They said that. And then they, because like Bellicon gets away as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what my theory is for that. I want it to be noted. I want it on the record.
It is for sure something to be like, put a pin in it and see mm-hmm. if that comes back around. Yeah.
Yeah. So for during sure. this time, everything went black, right? And when Cirrus, like, she woke up, Fisher and Taladeus were next to her. Tal states that Cirrus will die in a few moments, and Fisher offers up another chunk of his soul, right? Just like he originally did to save Lorth. However, if he did this, he would also die. Like, he already gave a good chunk away. He can't give any more away. Cirrus states, mm-hmm. if you sacrifice yourself for me, I'll reject our bond in this life and the next. Ouch. But, like, I get it. But ouch. But I don't think she could have said anything else that, like, would have made
him stop. Yeah, that's the only way she's getting him to stop and pay attention.
Oh, for sure.
Her. Correct. Like, if she was just like, no, please don't. It would be like Willy Wonka. Like, no, please stop. Please don't. He'd be like, yeah, shut up. I'm doing this right? anyway.
No, exactly. I agree. So Tal begs Fisher to let him help, but he's super hesitant. We know that Tal was second to Malcolm in power and that he hid it from him the whole time. He can turn Cirrus basically into what he is, right? Like almost like he's a prince. So they also do not know if when they turn her, if she will have to feed to survive. Time is running out and Cirrus is fading into the blackness. Tal asks if she consents and Fisher consents for her. He says she consents.
End chapter.
Yeah, there's no other choice.
No.
It's like when someone is like incapacitated and you should ask them for to consent before you can administer first aid. But if they are incapacitated, you have to assume that they are consenting.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
She consents. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
End chapter 43. Chapter 44, access. So the amphitheater is crashing down around everyone, and Ceres is going in and out of it as Fisher is attempting to conjure a shadow gate and get everyone out of there. She then hears a voice in her head, and it says, and for this part, there's going to be a lot of quotes. So just be ready, guys. It says, "The mountain that weathers all storms. He is the storm. You are the peace that must come after it. Tell me, do you believe in the fates, alchemist?" And then it says, "Do not drift too far from the shore, Ceres Fane. Come back now. Come back." And Tal informs Fisher that the transition is starting. So Ceres is actively transitioning into vampire. This voice that comes into her head once before, it says, "You stand before a door. Your hand is poised to knock. Are you ready to walk through it? Will you leave this place and see what lies beyond in the next?" A shadow falls across Yvelia. "It will alter all it touches. You would rather remain here, knowing that suffering and hardship loom on the horizon, that sacrifices will need to be made." That's pretty crazy, right? And she's like, yeah, trying to figure out like what this voice is. And this voice also says, it says, "Then we call in our favor, Ceres Fane. Will you honor your word and grant us our favor?" So if you remember in the last episode, she finds the coin that has the Quicksilver in it. The Quicksilver asks for a simple favor. And she says, "Yes, I will grant you whatever favor this is at a later point in time." So this is the Quicksilver in her head speaking to her once more. And it is officially asking for the favor. But it's not in the normal like voice. It's in a different kind of voice, right? And so it says, "Will you grant us our favor?" And she says, "Yes." And it says, "We require an audience with you." That is a favor, officially. So Ceres agrees to meet with the voice as soon as she is well. She says, "As soon as I'm better." But the voice had other plans in mind. The string that she felt tugging her to the Quicksilver wound tight and ripped her physically out of Kingfisher's arms and pulled her like mid-air all the way through the labyrinth. It grabbed her by the waist and pulled her under the giant Quicksilver pool that laid at the center. Can you imagine?
No.
A, being that, but just like, whooshing through the air nonetheless, and then through, Kingfisher's point of view, like yeah, through the whole thing,
yeah,
just no. Like whoosh, and then Kingfisher 1 second having you in his arms, and then the other second you're like gone.
No.
Insane.
Yeah,
absolutely wild. But then my two favorite characters come back into play.
Mm-hmm.
I love these girlies. So there's some quotes. It says, "It's dead. Don't be ridiculous. Of course it isn't dead. How can you be so sure?" "Because Father willed it here, stupid. He doesn't want it to be dead. Therefore, it isn't." Two young girls are standing over Ceres, wondering if it can understand them. When Ceres finally addressed her surroundings, they ask her what it is like being with Fisher, their father's champion. I love these girls. They're literally the best.
I love just the line, their father's champion, because it's just so mirrored from, you know, the way Bellicon views him or the way he views himself even. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dog, worthless, unimportant.
Yeah.
A failure. Yes. Yeah. But he is literally the champion of God. Agreed. So Ceres realizes that she is with the Corcoran, and I had to research a little bit to like remember what this was. So this is the collective of fey gods that are to be worshipped. They are a makeup of 7 gods total. These are the gods Madra got rid of within the Silver City before she changed the worship to herself as the Undying Herald of the Northern Banner. For a reminder, believers of this like Northern Banner, right? Believers of this carry strands of Madra's hair in a pouch on their belts and scrape the ashes from the funerals of the living sacrifices burned in her honor. This was to give them never-ending life and ward off the plague. And if you have listened to previous episodes, like way earlier ones, Cass and I went off about this for a while.
These belt bags.
These little belt bags to help you from the plague, and they didn't work. The plague's not real.
Yeah, the plague's not even real to begin with.
Correct. But you got to have Madra's hair. Who knows when she refreshes the hair? I don't know when the samples are sent out.
Yeah, and like how much of her hair is getting cut off here?
Right. Is it just like a little couple of strands? Is it, I mean, there's a lot of people in her cities.
Magic hair? Does it grow back?
Are they having to pay for this hair? Is she selling it? Who is chosen for these sacrifices? Are they volunteers?
They're not volunteers. There's so many questions. They're volunteers.
I wouldn't think so.
Definitely not.
So for this, I went back and I made sure to find all the gods because there's seven of them, right? So this is the seven god breakdown. If I pronounce any of these wrong, I'm so sorry. I reread this chapter instead of re-listening to it like I normally do. So if I mess it up, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. So god number one, you have Styx, the god of shadows. Curin, the god of secrets. Nisenai, the goddess of masks. Malleus, god of dawn and new beginnings. Balmithin, which are twin goddesses and are counted as two gods, Bal and Mithin, and they are the goddesses of the sky. And then you have Xerath, who is the god of chaos and change. So that is the breakdown of them. In this, like way back in the day, so chapter 7, right, the dog, via Everlane to Ceres. Legend says that they were one god, right? This is like for Bal and Mithin. They were one god, but a mighty storm came and Bal Mithin refused to take shelter as it raged across the land. The powerful spirit within the storm was furious that Bal Mithin didn't cower before him, and so he lashed her with forks of lightning again and again. The lightning struck Bal Mithin, but she didn't die. Instead, she cracked and split in two, becoming Bal and Mithin. Bal is the goddess of the sun, but the goddess of the day in a looser sense. Mithin is the goddess of the moon, but again, she presides over all of the night. Bal, Mithin, the twins. It's a full circle, for sure.
Yeah.
I have so many questions. Who is this powerful spirit? Who is powerful than these two, at one goddess, now two god like goddesses, first of all? Where was Xerath during this moment? Those are his daughters, right? Was it his daughter originally? Or is this a folktale that isn't actually true? Because it just says legend says. So are we going to find out in book two more about this?
Maybe.
Perhaps. I don't know. But I wanted to kind of like recap it a little bit so we can get some more history. So as the girls take Ceres by the hand, they basically step through time to the top of the hill. They're at the bottom, now they're at the top. Now they're underneath a giant oak tree. Another super full circle moment from the bonus chapters. Because if you guys remember, if you did the bonus chapters and or listened to our bonus chapter episode, Kingfisher had to visit this place in the gate part two. Right? And he was like looking up atop the hill and he was like, who is that? She's hurt. I can smell her. Right? We know that this was... That moment then is the exact same time as this moment now, because time is all and nothing in this area.
If he could smell her, how come when he first came across her, he wasn't like, oh, same person?
I don't know. Maybe because it was a mixture of him and her. Maybe because she's already transitioning in this moment. So maybe her scent is changing.
Maybe.
Like when he met her, right, he knew who she was.
Yeah.
But, when he came through the portal.
Yeah. But I think it would have added some weight had it not only looked like the person that his mother had, you know, I can't think of the word.
Like wrote about? Like she wrote it in her books?
Wrote about. Yeah.
Prophesied about?
Yeah. But also smelled like this being that he saw, you know, from afar.
Yeah.
I think it would have added a little bit more weight to it. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe the scent does change.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it doesn't say anything about her scent changing, but that's, we're also like, she's just started her, you know what I mean? She just transitioned and or is transitioning.
That's kind of like a next book question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Or maybe he did know that was her from the scent, right? But then he just didn't, he was like looking at her face and he's like, oh, I know who you are. And then it all came full circle for him as well.
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It says, amidst the roots of the giant oak tree, a broad 8-foot-wide ribbon of silver formed a moat. So much quicksilver. I started when I noticed the beads of the shining metal spilling down the tree's broad trunk like sap and rolling into the moat. So Ceres is obviously tense when she is like pushed towards Xerath, who sits on top of a rock. So the girls are pushing her towards him. Fae superstition says that they should never look upon this god or have him look upon them. It says, his was the voice that had asked me if I wanted to pass through the door or stay in Yvelia with Fisher. I had a feeling that it was his voice I had been speaking to for a long time now.
Wild.
Wild.
As you're reading these chapters, you're just like, it's all coming together. Like,
yes.
So many plot points are being connected within mm-hmm. these three chapters.
So here's my question. So if I'm reading this correctly, Xerath's voice is the voice that Ceres has been hearing this whole time, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the times that the Quicksilver is speaking to her, right?
Yeah, I would.
She's been hearing it for some time now.
Yeah.
We know all the conversations that have been in her head.
Right. Yeah, I guess it.
Is it him? Is it
Part
him?
Part of me says yes, but like, he can only have so much influence, I think, on conversations in her life. Like, I don't think he directly was like, I don't know.
I just want to understand it like more, right?
It seems like he can like plant, he can put the characters where they need to be and like mm-hmm. plant the seeds. But as far as what actually transpires, I don't know.
So like let's
word
say
for word, do you think he has control over these conversations, or is it he can put the right people or the right beings or the right Quicksilver in the right place mm-hmm. at the right time?
And that's a great question.
The conversations unfold the way that he wants.
So let's say hypothetically, the Quicksilver is obviously connected, right? Hypothetically, let's say that he can speak through the Quicksilver, because we know that he's in her head. He can basically, right? Because she's yeah. like, I've heard this voice yep. for a long time now. And we know all the conversations that have been in her mind have been through the Quicksilver itself. So let's say that mm-hmm. he is capable of this. I would also presume that Balin Mithin are capable of this. And who loves to torture because they're bored more than those yeah. two girls?
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
And to add on to this, we learn that not only is Xerath in charge of that tree, all of the gods, all of his brothers and his sister are in charge of that tree. Do they also mm-hmm. have access to the Quicksilver? Are all the gods speaking to the alchemists via Quicksilver?
Interesting.
Am I thinking too much? Am I thinking into it too much?
No, I don't know. I'm digesting. It is interesting to me because, like you mentioned, like Bal and Mithin being able to do that as well. But thinking about like when Kingfisher visits them in the bonus chapters,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel like they have that much of a grasp on what is going on in his world.
Mm-hmm.
Like that meticulously.
Fair. So maybe it's another god.
Yeah.
And yeah. another reason why I think this is that the Quicksilver that's in Kingfisher is so incredibly mean to him so often. And who are his one of his greatest enemies that we learned later on in this episode as well is that all of these gods, minus Xerath, Balin Mithin, are legit his enemy. Like, he made an enemy of these gods. So if they do mm-hmm. have the power and the opportunity to speak to him, they're going to make his life miserable.
Yeah, would they torture him?
He is only alive because of Xerath, because Xerath said so.
Yeah. That is interesting. It could be.
I want to know everybody else's thoughts. So if you guys have thoughts on this, please put in the comments. I need to know what everybody else is thinking when they read this.
I can say that I did not think, I always thought of the Quicksilver almost as its own being, which we've discussed. And like every right. Quicksilver is different and has their own wants and desires and all of that. But mm-hmm. I've never thought about if it is almost a gateway to speak for the gods to speak to them.
Like a little speaker. Yeah. I like both theories, right? I like the fact that it is its own entity. It does have its own thoughts and feelings, mm-hmm. and it mm-hmm. does make its own choices. But I also love the idea that it is the actual gods of the universe choosing when and how to speak. Because if we think about it, it does have its own personalities or its own things and its own, you know what I mean? Each weapon or each relic or each item has a different want or a different way. So is each god also, as we learn about them, have their own personalities, right? Is Nyx, right, one of the gods, silly? Is it like more of a goofy god, right? And then that is Simon.
Yeah.
And it likes Carrion's jokes.
Think how much more important that would make an alchemist than they already are.
Mm-hmm. Literally able to speak to the gods.
Right. A gateway to the gods. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And as we go through the episode, I might try and debunk my own theory. So we'll see. Because I have more thoughts.
Okay.
So he says, I have spent a great deal of time watching the threads of the universe, waiting for one such as you. He said, an alchemist at last to reset the balance and clear the way for what is to come. Here we stand at the edge of the universe. The roots you see growing down into the earth, into the Quicksilver, are the anchors of fate. The silver leaves above mark all the realms of our domain. My family are the stewards of all you see here. We water the roots of fate. We train the boughs and prune the leaves to prevent rot and decay. You see the bow there, the blackened one? And Xerath literally waves his hand and multiple leaves fall from the tree into the Quicksilver River. And he says, there is rot spreading throughout my domain, Saris. Realms that are infected with that rot have to be summarily destroyed to protect the rest of the tree and prevent that rot from spreading. He asks Saris if she understands, and we realize that in this moment, he just wiped out multiple realms with one flick, and each leaf being an entire realm, making up billions of people. Billions of Fae. He's just like, whoosh. Leaves gone.
This makes me feel less that it is a gateway to the gods, because it talks about it having like, we water the roots. It's not like we are the roots. Like, I don't know.
Right. Like the tree is a separate entity.
Right. It gives more, we have some touch on fate and what's going to happen, but we're not mm-hmm. having the immediate conversations.
Right. Like
that the Quicksilver's having with Saris or mm-hmm. so on and so forth. So
then what has he been saying to her for some time now that she says? What conversations are we missing? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And then here's another wild thing, maybe possibility theory. Is the Quicksilver the fates? Are the fates speaking to her? Because you have the gods, right? And then above them, you have the fates. And the fates decide. Mm-hmm. And Xerath talks to the fates, but the fates have their own plan either way. So is the alchemist and the Quicksilver, like, is it a straight connection to the fates?
I guess.
We don't know anything about them.
No. And how important is Quicksilver, or how close does Quicksilver touch every other being's life? Obviously, mm-hmm. it's so prevalent to Saris because she is an alchemist and she can right. speak to it. But like every other being that's alive out there, are they influenced by Quicksilver? Even though they can't
think.
I don't think so, which is why I...
It can choose to speak to them, right? It spoke to Carrion. When Carrion got his sword, right? Or like when Lorith got sore, they were like, whoa, can you, you heard that? Like it can choose when to speak to somebody.
What if you're a human?
Like, I mean, just Ceres, technically, at that point in time, she's an alchemist, yes. And she was supposed to be Fae, but she was not. And Xerath notes later on that, like, there's a ton of alchemists in Zelvaren. Are they all Fae? And there's alchemists throughout every realm.
But what about, like, Elroy, right? Like, just pick, or, like, Hayden. Does the Quicksilver affect their fate? Or is the Quicksilver still, like, the Fates to somebody like that that's never been really touched by it?
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's I think it's to it. It's like the speaker, right? So like, let's say like I'm the Fate. This microphone is my Quicksilver. I'm now choosing to speak to you, or I could choose, like, I could turn my mic off and choose not to speak to you. Same thing as like if the gods were in the Quicksilver, like using it as like a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wild theory.
I would be interested to see if an Elroy or a Hayden could be spoken to by the Quicksilver.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I still have the theory that Elroy is actually Kingfisher's dad, but we have no proof
on that. Maybe he's a bad example, but, you know.
Hayden for sure.
Yeah.
The wench at the bar.
Yes, I was going to say, someone just walking around the third. Like,
yeah.
Can they hear the Quicksilver? If it's choosing to speak to them,
right?
I don't know.
And this is why we need a Quicksilver point of view. I need a Quicksilver bonus chapter in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It keeps me up at night. So I don't know. Who is the Quicksilver? Who are they? They have a lot to say. I don't know. So again, we know that Ceres is not the only alchemist, right? But we learn that there are millions of her kind. There are even hundreds, again, of her kind living in her realm and the city of Zelvaren. So she's not the only one. And it's crazy because all of this time, these people have kept this quiet, right? No one has said anything. And then they say, I saw an axis in the flow of things, a burning knot in the tapestry of all that would come to be. When I focused and saw the strength of the bond that connected the two of you together, I attempted to sway the fates. And then he says, you were supposed to have been born Fae in the same realm as your Kingfisher. So I separated you. Hundreds of years before you were born, I shifted the events around your birth, moved the pieces on the board, and placed you far away in a realm that should have never have come into contact with his. But I watched as the bows of the universe grew against their nature and aligned in such a way that you would still meet. I foresaw then that no matter how the bows and branches of this tree were manipulated, you and he would always collide. There was nothing I could do to stop it.
Which, to me, debunks that theory. I admit I attempted to sway the fates.
Because he can talk to them.
Right, but he's...
Which theory? We have a lot in the air right now.
I guess a theory of... To me, that just wouldn't make the Quicksilver the Fates or the Quicksilver's voices the voices of the gods.
Okay.
To me. I just feel like if the Quicksilver's voices were the voices of the gods, then he wouldn't have been attempting to sway the Fates. He would have just changed the Fates. He'd have been like, attempting to sway is like, to me, like I'm asking this of you, or I'm like trying to make this happen. But if he had that much control over it, I feel like he'd be like, no, I just straight up changed them. But then they wouldn't have ever met. So I don't know.
Right. We'll find out.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. Many options. Or maybe we're all wrong and it's something that we never even thought of.
Maybe.
There's a lot to like dig into here, and there's, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see inside Callie's notebook. There's a lot written in those notebooks. So Saris is obviously like, why the heck are you changing things around? Like, what gives you the right to do that?
Right? What did I ever do to you, man?
Yeah. Sorry, I was going to be born. My bad. So he notes at Saris to look down at the base of the tree. There were bare and black knots in the tree that she didn't see before, and a large portion of the tree was dying. He states that there is a balance with all things, light and dark, joy and sorrow, good and evil, etc. However, when a thread such as Saris and Kingfisher are aligned on the axis, they create a well of power. And because of that, there will be a counterweight of power as well, no matter which way the gods look at this. If they are together, a majority of this tree dies. He says that the moment the two met and even became mates, that it sparked the fire that will spread throughout, and he attempted to change it, but the fates are stubborn. So is the Quicksilver. I just want that on the record.
Yeah.
I want that on the record.
Yeah.
So Saris asks a great question of if Fisher knows about any of this. He has no idea. Xerath states that Fisher's mother had just passed, and Fisher's disposition wasn't very polite. Fisher made an enemy of Xerath's family and is only alive, again, because he willed it to be. So, he has literal gods as enemies. When he showed up there, when he was a kid, it did not go well. Which, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that happening. Each time Xerath looks into the past of the universe, there is a darkness there where he cannot see what happens. The blackness shows a possibility at a chance of life and survival only because there was one common thing each time, which is Fisher and Saris fought side by side and they were godbound. That was the only way he could see some sort of light at the end of this tunnel, right? The godbinding was a choice made by Xerath and gifted to both of them because he also states, "These oaths mark you as my ward. They protect both you and Fisher from the unwanted attentions of my brothers and sister. They would rather kill Fisher and roll the dice on what comes next. They would prefer to weather the storm on the horizon and replant our tree once the slate has been wiped clean. I don't want that to happen. It would break my daughters' hearts." Which also sort of debunks my own theory that it's the gods talking to him, because if he's now godbound, then how are they talking to him through the Quicksilver? But the godbounds are also pretty new, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think maybe I just debunked my own theory.
It's okay.
Either way. Also, yeah. What a good dad.
Yeah.
He
just wants his daughters to be happy.
Yeah. This god of chaos and change literally changed the future and the past of multiple people and Fae, and went against the fate's wishes, all to make sure that his daughters were happy.
Yeah.
Dad of the year. And the girls are out there like, why can't we have a boyfriend?
Yeah.
He says, if you truly accept Fisher as your mate, then you must agree for the thread of your life to be severed from the tapestry of the universe. Once you do, none of us may affect your future. We won't be able to see you at all, nor will my brothers and my sister be able to interfere with timelines and events that affect you either. You'll be on your own. Wild. What a question to ask.
I know. Like,
by the way, we're going to erase you essentially, but you'll be there. You're just like invisible.
Yeah. And we can never help you if you get into trouble.
Correct. Yes. Saris claims that she's a nobody and a thief, and Xerath interrupts her to show her that this is how she saves Kingfisher's life. She questions the process, right? And what is about to come next and how it will work. And he states, by transforming you into something that has never been seen before, the universe cannot focus on that in which it does not recognize. Right? He's literally the god of change. Mm-hmm. So bro can do whatever. He can change anything, right? So she agrees to it, and the god bindings on her wrists light up and they start to burn. Xerath says, the best of luck to you then, Saris. Give Kingfisher my best before shoving her back into the Quicksilver.
I just remember I was on a run when I finished this audiobook and I was like, all right, but he didn't have to shove her.
Yeah, he's like, boop, have fun. Have a great day.
Yeah.
Just pushes her right into the river coming from the tree. Goodbye. Yeah, that's honestly an iconic line.
Yeah.
I loved it. And that is the end of chapter 44. And this brings us to our final chapter, chapter 45, Choose Wisely. Ceres is floating in the nothingness outside of the universe, the void, essentially, right? She is legit watching and feeling civilizations rising and falling. She's looking at the universe. The universe is looking at her. She was born. She died 100 times. Everything is just there and not there and everything and nothing at the same time. But then she spotted something she probably shouldn't have, which was a bird. And if you guys remember, the tattoo on her collar was of a bird, right? Yes. As it fluttered around her, she started to remember important things. The color jade, winter mint, snow, cold mountain air, a crooked smile, and dark, thick waves of hair. She reached out for him and finally came back to reality, right? So she sees Kingfisher. She reaches out. She finally is brought back to Earth. Or whatever realm they're in, universe they're in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As Ceres got sick for a hot second, right, she realizes that she was in a room with dark furniture and she wasn't alone. But Kingfisher was not there. It was Taladeus. He tells her that she's going through changes and she can eat normal food once again sometime soonish, right? He mentioned that the transition is hard and it hits Ceres that she is a literal vampire. She's like, wakes up, she comes to reality and she's like, oh my God. Holy shit, I'm literally a vampire. And she claims that she is nothing like Tal, right? She's like, I'm nothing like you. And he agrees because she is something entirely different. She was a vampire because Tal turned her in order to save her. But when she looks in the mirror, she sees that she is now Fae. Beautiful, pointed ears poke out of her hair and sharp canines are in her mouth. Can we take a moment to think about what Hayden and Elroy are going to say when they see her once again? Because she not only is a vampire now, she has canines, she has pointed ears, and she is covered in tattoos. Are they even going to recognize her?
And gained weight.
Yes, she is not thin and dehydrated anymore. She has glowy skin now.
I assume it'd be similar to me and my comparisons. I assume it would be similar to Bella coming back home to her dad after being turned into a vampire. Like,
yeah. She had
red or gold eyes and was ice cold.
Yeah. Her and dad was like, real nonchalant, though, if I remember correctly.
A million times more beautiful. For no reason.
Not that baby, though.
No, I don't want to talk about Renesmee. I take my comparison back.
I ruined it. My bad. No, they really should redo that. They need to remake that it.
Scary puppet.
Yes. That movie had all of society in a chokehold for a long time.
Yeah.
It sure did. That's wild. I love it, though. It's been a long time since I watched it. Yeah. I probably should watch it once again. I've never read the books. I will be honest about that. Oh, all of the, like, older, like, Twilight, Hunger Games, Save Virgin, all. I never read any of them. I only watched the movies. I know.
Have to deep dive those one day.
We tried to do Hunger Games, and every episode that we recorded malfunctioned. So the universe said no.
The fates
have spoken. They said, you're not doing this. This is not a mini episode that is coming to fruition for you. Sorry.
The fates were controlling our future there.
Yes. Sorry, fates. My bad. Oops. Won't do it again.
I didn't know you hated the Hunger Games so much.
Yeah. <Chill. laughs> Oh, I can't. So Tal mentions to her that they are waiting for Fisher before any questions of their location are discussed. And Ceres attempts to open the curtains to let some light in. Terrible idea. She's instantly blinded. And Tal tells her that in time, she will be able to tolerate that soon enough. The memory of what happened at Gilthright is questioned. And we learned that when a prince bites someone to turn them, they can put a memory block on it because it is a painful thing to go through. Ceres demands that he removes it, and he does, which so cool. also so weird. Yeah. Like, he doesn't have to bite her again to do it or, like, do anything. He's just like, okay, gone. Like, they have that power over all that they have turned. They can, like, choose to block out those memories.
Very interesting.
And it's also interesting because it doesn't seem, like, very vampire evil-ish-esque, if that makes sense. Yeah. To, like, it's a painful thing, so we're going to block it out for you.
Right.
I thought it was very weird. But anyways, he gives back her memories. The moments start coming flooding. They flood back into her. And she remembers that during her transitioning, when she was asleep for multiple days, she literally bit Taladeus. He's fine. There is no scar. He is okay.
He's fine.
It reminded me of, like, when you have a procedure done at a hospital. Like when I was little, I got my tonsils removed. And then they tried to wake me up the first time and it came up swinging. So they were like, back to sleep. Let's give her a couple hours. Like, I came up, like, swinging at these nurses. Unaware of anything. Right?
Wild.
They're like, she's not ready to wake up yet. It reminded me of that.
Yeah, kind of. Like you said, it is very kind to be like, you know what? This is too traumatizing for you. We don't want you to remember this.
Yep. Let me just put a little blocker on it. Little shadow. Yeah. No big deal. But during this, Ceres is definitely conflicted because should she thank him for saving her, kill him for all of the other things? We also learn that Tal did not have a choice in this matter, right? Because he was bound to Malcolm. So nothing that he did was his choice. And Ceres doesn't know this, but we know that Taladeus, per like the bonus chapters of the maze, Tal tried to help Kingfisher as much as he possibly could, right? He tried very hard to go around or on the line of what Malcolm said that he had to do, right? So, like, he would bring him wine because Malcolm said that he couldn't have any water. And Malcolm said, make him bleed. So he brought out a little pin needle and, like, poked him and made him bleed. So, like, he did try. So Tal, thankfully, is now free because Malcolm is dead. We finally get our conversation with Carrion Swift as well, also known as Carrion Deanthus.
Yeah.
He still had the same – I know – so many questions. Here we go. So he still has the same hair color and the same eyes, but he's much taller now and he has pointed ears and sharp teeth. So glamour gone. When he pulled the glamour off, I don't know, but glamour is no longer there. And Ceres has known him since she was 15 years old, but Carrion has known her since he was 1086. So she was 24, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 24, maybe 25 by now. Because, like, all of this happened in a span of months, right? Mm-hmm. So does that make him, like, how old does that make him?
Old.
Like, well over 1,000, like, over 1,090? I don't know. And I also want to note on the record that Kingfisher is 1,733 years old.
Creepy.
In case
old
anyone
man.
Was like Kingfisher is way older than Carrion Swift.
Yeah.
Carrion Deanthus. So it's very interesting. So we also finally learn the clarifications of his grandmother. We have talked about this also in previous episodes about who was his grandmother. Was she really Fae? What's happening? And he says, well, no, not really. She was more of a ward. Or a playmate, and when she was little, and then a friend. And then I was her ward. And he says, I don't know. It always got very complicated as people aged. So Fisher's, and Ceres asks, she says, so Fisher's father took you to Zelvar when you were little to save you from Bellicon. He glamored your ears and your canines so you wouldn't stand out. He brought a bag of books along with you so you could learn about your heritage and return when the time was right. And some woman saved you? We learn that his grandmother was human and not his grandmother at all. Her name was Orlena. Orlena Perry. She was a slave in Madra's palace, but that night, the night she pulled me out of the Quicksilver, she fled the palace and escaped. She went to the third, knowing she should get lost there, like in the crowd. And that's where she stayed. She found work as a seamstress and secured somewhere for us to live. And she raised me like I was her own son. And he also says, I had the books that Finwen brought for me about the Fae and my people. Orlena got married when I was 9 and took the same name, Swift. She had a daughter not long after, Petra. Petra grew up and had a daughter too. The books are passed down the female line, and so was I. They kept me out of trouble the best they could and made sure that I kept a lookout for signs that the Quicksilver had opened again. They thought it was cruel that I was stuck in the Silver City and that I should go home and rule my people. The females of the Swift line have always been very bossy and overly concerned about my love life. Okay. I want to break this down just a little bit, right? Because how old was Carrion when he went through the Silver? We know that he was like thousands of years old when he met Ceres. So her being 15 right. has like nothing to do with it, right? We know right. that Orlena got married when he was 9. But how long, like, was he a baby?
Right.
Was he 8 years old? Right. And then she like quickly got married afterwards, because I think that this answer answers a lot of our previous questions. Right. Can Carrion fight with a sword? Can he not yeah. fight with a sword? Can he swim? Can he not swim? All of the things. Right. Like, how old was he? And then if he truly knows more information than these books. So they brought the books to teach him about his people because he knew some things, but maybe not a lot of things. Right. So he genuinely was like a fake kid. Little,
which is why I think he cannot swim.
I would probably agree with that. But I mean, by 9 years old,
but
you should be able to swim.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But like sword fighting, things like that, those are things he still could learn growing up under this ward. Like,
that's true.
In the house, right? But like yeah. they had no access to water there. Mm-hmm. So even if these people that raised him knew how to swim,
yeah,
because that's where, you know, the original mm-hmm. one, they wouldn't have had the means to teach him if we're yeah. just talking about him swimming.
And also, it does not note where Bellicon went, or not Bellicon, but where Finwen went, like where Kingfisher's dad went after they came through Quicksilver. Mm-hmm. Orlena grabbed him and took him somewhere. So, like, it doesn't say whether or not he was captured, whether or not he escaped, whether or not something happened. It does not tell us anything about this backstory. And
right.
I think that this gives us wiggle room in a way to say that Elroy is still the dad, because if he was so small, like, if Carrion was so small during this point in time, he would not recognize Elroy.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Elroy did not come into his life again until he met Ceres.
Right.
Just a thought.
I could get on board with all of that. Maybe not as much as the fox theory, but.
There's something with that fox. I'm telling you. So many questions. Yeah. So Carrion tells Ceres that that it was true. Like when Fisher came through the portal to save Hayden, he told them he was Hayden to save him. He was like, that wasn't just so I could come back home. He says, I truly thought Hayden was in danger. And she believes him, right? However, she, out of all the things, Ceres is upset that Carrion slept with her. Like, what? She's like, you didn't even tell me. Why would he tell you? And he says, all right, I'm sorry. I didn't disclose to you that I was a magic-wielding political asylum seeker posing as a human when I slept with you. Does that make you feel better?
That's just like the most real reaction, though. Like, I would have said the same thing, but you didn't tell me. Like,
yeah, okay, fair.
I love that. I feel like it's such a realistic reaction,
like a real girl response.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I have had so many situations in my life where some of my closest friends have like told me this secret after the fact. And I'm like, why didn't you tell me? And they're like, I literally couldn't. Like, or like, yeah. you literally would have thought I was insane.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fair. I love that. I love
Good
that.
Good on you, Ceres.
Yeah.
So during the time that Ceres went back to look for the coin, like that ended up being in Mort Hill, a lot happened. Lorth explains that when the wind came in to sweep away all of the Fae and Gilthry, all of the god swords came back to life. And when Bellicon saw that the angel's breath came out of Lorth's sword, he ran away. So again, Madra and Bellicon are still alive. is Malcolm coming back? Is Malcolm really still alive? Unsure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Voldemort vibes.
Yes. Agreed. Unanswered theory in book two. So, Lorith explains to Ceres that Dianthus blood was used to create the blood curse in the first place, and that vampires cannot drink from the living members of the bloodline. This should have killed Malcolm instantly, but because he was alive for so long, he was too powerful. This had also been, like, this was also the reason Malcolm ordered Bellocon to kill both of Carrion's parents and why Carrion had to flee in the first place. They posed a huge threat to Malcolm. Just as we're about to learn about Carrion's parents from Fisher, because Fisher's like, oh, I know about your parents, Carrion is asked to leave so they can be alone. I was a little mad.
Yeah.
Like, I know you guys want to be together. I get it. But, like, you can't be like, oh, I know about your mom and dad. And they're like, yeah, but get out. Info. I needed that information. Maybe I don't have it now.
In a Carrion novella.
Yes. She has talked about a Carrion novella.
I know. My dream. 10 out of 10
would read. We'll deep dive it.
My dream. I don't need a Strix Silver POV if I just get a Carrion novella.
Yes. When they announce it, I will message you first thing if you don't see it before I do.
Perfect.
She's talked about it. So, I mean, maybe. I hope so. So, as they are talking about all the things, Ceres notices that the Quicksilver in Fisher's eye is smaller. We learn that Taelena and Isabel have worked together to start getting it out of his system. He states, Isabel teased the smallest amount out of him. It will take time, but with more sessions, it can be removed. Okay. Here is why I am somewhat not loving the theory anymore that Ceres has to save him because the Quicksilver gets too bad.
Yeah.
Something could go wrong, right? Something could happen. That theory is still possible. But I think that this line right here tells us that maybe it's not.
Yeah, I agree. I think...
go ahead.
What could go... If Carrion and Hayden are going back...
Me, Carrion and Fisher?
Carrion and Hayden. Carrion and Fisher are going back.
Yes.
For Hayden.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I could see something going wrong.
Yeah. But Ceres isn't allowed to go there. So if anything, it would be like Carrion having to save him.
Or Carrion coming back and running in and being like,
yeah,
he's dying.
He's stuck there.
You
he
have
needs
to
help.
Save him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. All right. I like that theory. Another thing, only alchemists can communicate with the Quicksilver, nonetheless make a bargain with them or discuss with them any sort of change. The Quicksilver had told Ceres, absolutely not, we are not coming out of there. How in the hell did Isabel tease the Quicksilver out of King Fisher?
I don't know. Offered it something how? Better.
I don't know. A, how can she keep... She is half witch, right? But does that tell us that the witches can also communicate? Is she also an alchemist that they just don't know? Like, how... I feel like that line was so nonchalant, but it really, like, struck me. How did she tease it out of there? A literal most powerful alchemist tried and failed.
Right. I don't know. Maybe that'll be touched on in the next book.
I hope so, because I was like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
And when she's like, it teased out of there, that tells me that she talked to it, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
I have so many questions about that.
Maybe.
I don't know. But all of the issues and problems that they are going, that they have, to, like they have right now, are going to have to wait, because when Fisher shows Ceres what is outside, she realizes she is on the opposite side of the Darn that she should be, and she is inside Amontreath. And he says, in the Fey courts, the crown is passed down to a regent's heir, but if the regent is murdered, the crown is claimed by the one who slew them. The vampire court has only ever had one king. Malcolm never named an heir, planning on living forever. He never conceived of the possibility someone might kill him. Ceres panics and tells him that this is not happening, but he replies with, tell them that. As far as the vampire court is concerned, you are to be coronated in 2 days' time. You officially become the new queen of Sanis Roth. The end.
There we are.
Oh my God. We did it.
We did it.
I told you I would tear up a little bit. It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm so proud of us.
I'm proud of us too. And I'm excited to see where it goes. There's so many theories mm-hmm. we have, and we could be completely wrong with every single one. It could be something.
Oh my, can you imagine?
Completely different.
If we were wrong on everything.
It could just be a fox. Though I don't think it is.
No, there's no way. There's no way. Oh my gosh. The end. 45 yeah. chapters later, a set of bonus chapters, an interview with Callie, all the things, two interviews yep. with the audiobook narrators.
And here we are wrapping it up.
Here we are. Thank you guys for listening to this. I'm so grateful for you guys. Thank you to Stella and Anthony for coming on to our baby podcast and giving us your time. Thank you, Callie, for also giving us your very precious, important time and hanging out with us. Wow. And I wanted to read the excerpt from Brimstone that was posted like a while back just to remind everyone like what we're going into next, right, in November. It says, Sarah Svane doesn't want power. The very last thing she needs is her name whispered on an entire court's lips. But now that she has been crowned Queen of the Blood Court, she's discovering that a queen's life is not her own. A heavy weight rests upon her shoulders. Her ward and her brother need her back in her homeland. But the changes that have strengthened Sarah have also made her weak. Born under blazing suns, Sarah will surely die if she makes her way home through the Quicksilver, which means that, once again, she must send someone else in her stead. With a quote, keep your mouth shut, stick to the shadows, and for the love of all seven gods, do not crack any jokes. Kingfisher of the Agent Gate has defeated armies and survived all manner of horrors, but traveling back to Zilvarian with Carrion Swift might just be the death of him. The male just will not shut up. Hidden dangers await them down narrow alleyways of the Silver City. Unfolding secrets pose impossible threats. Fisher must wrangle the smuggler and accomplish his goals quickly if it wants to see his mate again. And a darkness falls across Evelia. The realm and their friends are in danger. Together, Saris and Fisher will pass through fire and brimstone to save them.
Yep.
Iconic.
It's gonna be a good one.
What a wild ride. Okay. All right. Here's my wrap-up question for you. What was your favorite moment of the entire deep dive? It can be anything. It can be about the episode, about the theories, about something that we don't see. Like, what was your favorite part?
I mean, the easy answer for me is obviously falling in love with Carrion. I feel like he's such a great character, and he deserved some love on this podcast.
He did. He does.
So.
Agreed.
Yeah. Being his little cheerleader.
She's team Carrion Swift.
I am. What was yours?
I love that there's finally like a platform to just talk about all the things that are in my mind, right? About yeah. these books. And again, like I think I've mentioned in other episodes before, like this podcast alone has helped my mental health so much, and my anxiety has gone down tremendously. Even on like regular days when things are crazy or like my anxiety is like flaring up again, right? I just think about the podcast, right? What episode am I going to do next? What listener am I going to reply to at lunch? Like all of these things, like what book are we going to do? I emailed this person to see if they're interested in coming to our podcast. Maybe they responded, right? So like, I feel like this has been such a huge thing in my life now that has been so positive, and I like discovered a passion that I never knew I would ever have.
Yeah, it's a great focus point to like center yourself on something else than day-to-day life.
Yeah, no, exactly. There's a lot going on out there, but like when we're doing this kind of stuff, like it's just talking about my favorite things, right? Like it's amazing. I love this book so much. It is a huge part of my life. It will always be a huge part of my life. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay. Question. Is our next... Should we announce... When is this episode coming out? I probably should have looked at that first. Calendar. When is our announcement coming out for Fate, Forge, and Fire is the question.
This comes out the 31st, and you said you wanted to announce a Fate, Forge, and Fire on the 1st, right?
Yeah. This comes out at midnight, right?
Midnight on the technically the on 1st.
The 1st. Okay. Should we mention it, or should I mention to keep a look? How should Let's I word just that? Do a look.
I would just do a lookout.
For our announcement coming out today.
Yeah. Because then you can, this wraps up Quicksilver, puts a nice bow on it, and then we can announce that separately. So it.
Okay.
It has a bow on the end of this.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. Well, Quicksilver is complete. Thank you guys so much for listening. Keep a lookout as of the moment that this episode is posted, August 1st, we'll be announcing our next mini deep dive. And then afterwards, we will be announcing our next big deep dive on a whole series. So keep a lookout. Keep it posted. Thank you guys for listening. If you love this, like, subscribe, share with your friends, listen along. And again, my name is Dallas.
My name's Alyssa.
Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.